Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Again, yeah, sorry, I forgot my lab coat and my goggles, but it is time for science class, so you can pull out your lab notebooks. We call them Sunday papers. It's the outline on the back. Okay, yeah. Yeah, so we're going to be looking for the rest of this month at science and what we learn about life from that. And you might have noticed it on the little blurb that's written in the intro that's written to the message today on the front of your Sunday paper that it says there's a battle going on between science and religion. And the funny thing is that God isn't aware that it's going on. I mean, like, God doesn't have any problems. I mean, the truth is that religion isn't a bad thing, but it is a human construction. It isn't the real thing itself. It's what human beings that try to make sense of the world, and then they turn it into in world and God and all those kinds of big things. And they, in order to make it keep running, they create a religion. Now, that's not a bad thing, but the problem is, because it becomes so important, it's like, you know, the sacred cow thing. It doesn't adapt the way it needs to. Anyway, so there's a lot of people that, with their understanding of a religion, think that science and religion can't mix and that there's something wrong between the two of them, that there's a competition going on here. And here's the deal. Like, no. All right? I mean, there's not a problem there. There doesn't need to be anything. There's a misunderstanding, and I'm sure you're all going to, you know, you've run into this a million places, that if there's something out there is natural, if it's explainable by science, then that wasn't God. On the other hand, if it is of God, then science is not supposed to be able to explain it. It has to break the laws of physics, otherwise it isn't God. It has to defy human understanding. My question is, like, where did we ever get that idea? Well, I mean, why does it have to be separated that way? To use some kind of classic Jacob's Well language, why does God have to be supernatural rather than supernatural? I mean, if God is not only the God of what we don't know and understand, but God is actually, and let's kind of be honest with the fact that when we say God, that's a placeholder for something we'll never be able to wrap our heads around. We don't really know what we mean when we say it. But if God is not just the God of the stuff we don't know, but God is the God of everything, then whether we know it or understand it really doesn't make any difference. Somehow it is more revealing who God is than hiding or, you know, whatever. They belong together. The reality that both science and common sense realize is that the world is far too complex for us to ever be able to completely grasp it or even be aware of what is going on in our world. And even at our very best efforts, as finite creatures, we live at the surface of this deep, rich fabric of existence that God has woven. I say God has woven. I use that kind of tenderly and loosely as what that might mean, that God has done that but participates in that with us. And what God does is seek us to get down deeper into that fabric. I mean, you can take that some moment right now. Just kind of suspend some of the busyness that's on your head and take a breath, maybe close your eyes, and figuratively wiggle your toes, right? Imagine that your socks or the soles of your shoes or the carpet underneath your feet is sort of this deep fabric of existence. And you wiggle your toes, you kind of work down deeper and deeper into the nap of that fabric. And you start participating, you start sensing something that is bigger, that is beyond you. And I think that's what God wants us to do, to participate in that which is beyond us. And we do it through contemplation, we do it through intuition, we do it through prayer. We do it through math, we do it through scientific inquiry, we do it through relationships, we do it through all of these things. We do it in order to test it, we do it to learn it, we do it to understand it, we do it in order to change our minds when we discover something new, because that's being honest, that's being aware that the world is big and we're being invited to discover it and to find things we never known before. And that's why we talk so much about rope here at Jacob's Well. Because it isn't just you, and it is just you and others, which is enough to stretch most of us. We'd like the world to just be about ourselves. But it's also about that which is beyond any of us, that we in some ways understand and we detect and we participate with, but we can never really do it fully. We never quite know what's going on with it all. So on your lab notebooks, on your outline, you'll find this. Scientific discovery doesn't threaten God's existence, all right? Let's just get rid of that notion. I don't care what some people say. I'll argue with them all day long. I'll argue with you all day long. It doesn't threaten God's existence. It empowers us to be co-creators with God. When Aaron and I were talking a couple of weeks ago, we brought up this point that we are called to be co-creators with God. God wants to participate with us. God, you know, we aren't to do this on our own. We're co-creators with God. We're co-creators with each other, helping this world become what it is. Maybe another way of saying that is when we make a scientific discovery, God isn't threatened. God celebrates. I mean, it's kind of like God, if God could do things like this, rather than saying, uh-oh, they're getting too close to me now, God's saying, finally, they're figuring out enough about this world so they can help me a little bit, you know? I mean, I think God celebrates the fact that we start understanding more and more about how things work and what that all means. Just a little bit about science and God, and I think that's important for us to do it. I'll visit a couple ideas about that every week. But what about diseases? That's why you're all here. So I'm just getting over a cold. Last week when I was trying to preach, it was really with me. I'm feeling fine now, but my nose is still kind of a faucet. Some person that I met who had this cold, these germs, was generous enough to share them with me. And I caught them and ran with them. And so that's what happens. So this is what happens with disease, right? Okay? Disease in the form of bacteria or virus. No, I'm not a doctor, so you don't actually have to believe anything I'm saying right now. But generally speaking, right, in the form of bacteria and viruses, they hop from one person to another and nothing. That's the truth, actually. The vast majority of times when one of these viruses or bacteria enters your system, Zippo happens. I mean, typically the transmission happens in conditions that killed the infection in the first place. It was exposed to air, it was exposed to light, it was too hot, too cold, too dry, too wet, whatever, and it couldn't survive. Or the bug found the wrong conditions in the new host. Or the host, and by the host I mean your body, okay, threw up myriad defenses, destroying it before it could get a chance to reproduce and bother you. Or maybe it did take up residence in you, and in fact it had absolutely no effect on you and you don't know it's there. In fact, you probably have thousands of those that you are carrying around with you that don't bother you, so we don't worry about them and we don't fight them, okay? No sweat. Most germs have no effect on us. But that's not always true, and we know that, right? Sometimes it doesn't go that way. The bubonic plague began to spread in the 14th century. You all have heard the stories about it. The funny thing is about that disease, that germ, is it was not new on the human scene. It had been around for centuries and centuries, infecting people, killing people, making them very sick. But something happened different. Its name is Yersinia pestis. You can meet it. There's Yersinia pestis, okay? It has been around for centuries, and it still is. As I said, it has been making people sick and even killing them the whole time. But it never became the Black Death until that moment in history when it started spreading from China and on through Asia into Europe and then into North Africa into the British Isles. Why this time? Why did it become the bubonic plague at that time? Well, it seems that scientists, epidemiologists have been doing a lot of research to try to understand that because it helps us understand potential pandemics today. And there had been an unusually warm period in those early Middle Ages, like between about year 1000 and 1300. Now, don't confuse that with climate change, all right? That's not what we're talking about. It's not on the scale of what climate change. That's another scientific issue that we need to pay attention to, but we're not going there right now, okay? But there was this warm period in those early Middle Ages that did a couple of things. First of all, it made it really, really good for growing crops in Europe in particular. And there was an agricultural, a lot of innovation around agriculture going on at that time. And because of that, during that period of time, there was an enormous growth in the population, particularly in Central Asia and Europe. And because of that, you're able to feed a lot more people, therefore the population goes up, and people are able to live more densely because there is a supply of food to feed these new urban centers that we're developing. And then because of that, too, trade routes were starting to be established from China all the way to England, carrying the goods and services that this new, better climate had allowed to happen. Okay? Then the 14th century happened, and that little bit warmer time ended, and a cooler time ended, and a lot of the crops couldn't grow or didn't grow as well. Some of them died, and suddenly there was not nearly the same food supply as there had been before. And so what happened? Well, not enough food to support these urban centers or the people. There were the numbers of people that were living in poverty, that were poorly fed, that were unhealthy and poorly housed increased dramatically. Yersinia pestis was a disease whose time had come. All right, it ran unchecked, following the lines of trade from China, starting in China, like I said, going through Asia and into Europe, North Africa, and the British Isles, killing half of Europe's population. One-fifth of all the people on this planet died of the bubonic plague, the Black Death during that period of time. 34 million people altogether, according to that. Okay, now here's the idea, or here's the deal, what I really want to talk about. Ideas are a lot like diseases. Ideas are a lot like diseases. There are a lot of them out there, and they're constantly being spread. Not by fleas, chickens, ticks, or mosquitoes, and not by coughs, sneezes, dirty needles, or ventilation systems, but by advertisements, TV, radio, music, books, newspapers, blogs, podcasts, churches, synagogues, mosques. Even once in a while in conversations, people still do it the old school way sometimes. We keep trading these ideas around. Ideas are everywhere, but most ideas don't spread very far. They don't get caught by anyone. Their time hasn't come. But like Yersinia pestis, it isn't that simple. To think that ideas either have their time or they don't sounds too much like fate and not enough like science. And just like we can understand how diseases spread by science, we can understand a lot about how ideas spread through science as well. Not as an exact in a science as you have with diseases. It's a strange thing to say, maybe, but ideas are messier than germs, at least in the way that they travel between us. But when we look deeper at what might seem like, well, lucky ideas and unlucky ideas, what we really find is that there are reasons why some ideas go viral, so to speak. We've got a lot of language like that, don't we? Around disease and ideas, we share a lot of the same words for both describing both of them. But we have some understandings. There's some reasons why they don't. And for the record, I like ideas. I think ideas are really important. They change things. Of all the tools we Homo sapiens have created and then wielded, ideas are the most powerful. And we have changed more things with our ideas than any physical object that we have ever created. In fact, all those physical objects were created because of an idea. There's Seth Godin. Many of you know him. He's kind of the guru for marketing. He's written a million books and so on. And he says this. He says, people who spread ideas win. Or maybe to change that just a little bit, ideas that spread win. I think it's an important thing to realize. And I think you are interested in ideas too. I probably don't have to convince you of that, but if for no other reason that the idea that gets spread is the one that wins, I think makes us very interested in ideas, and we're interested in maybe good ideas over bad ideas, because those are the ones that we want to spread. And I think that's really important. Jesus was interested in ideas too. Godin said, ideas that spread win. Jesus said, go and make followers of all people. Jesus said, I've got some ideas. I think ideas are really important. And these ideas need to win. They need to get spread. So go find followers of the ideas among all people. And what are these ideas? I mean, no, they're not ideas about this is what churches are like, or this is what my religion is, or these are the sacraments. The ideas, they were ideas like love. There are ideas like compassion, forgiveness, about the last go first and the first go last. There are ideas about sacrifice. There are ideas about giving and hope and mercy. He knew those ideas were ideas that their time had come, and he was going to make sure that they spread. And he did a pretty good job of it, even though we've mucked up a lot of these ideas. But they keep working, don't they? They keep finding their way. They keep finding their birth. I think we know how important those ideas are. I was listening to the radio, but the broadcast all night long about what was happening in London and the terrorist attacks and just the seeming violence of random and innocent people just to make a point or to cause a reaction. Who knows why people do the things that were done there? But those are ideas that need to not spread. And the way of not spreading them is to spread other ideas, ideas that give life. We need ideas that can change the world, that embrace the fullness of our humanity and that join us together rather than tearing us apart. Ideas that help us to care for this earth from which we derive our life and that makes us dig deeper than our own understanding, our own immediate understanding to figure out what this world is all about so that we can participate and so we can co-create with that which is always going to be bigger than we can ever be and can ever imagine. And we need to make sure that those ideas spread. So, what makes an idea spread? Like I said, an inexact science, but one thing that might be contrary to what you're thinking is that it's not how good the idea is that makes it spread or not. It's not about how good an idea it is. I mean, wouldn't it be wonder if we knew that only good ideas would spread and the bad ones wouldn't? Unfortunately, that wouldn't explain some of these things. It wouldn't explain fidget spinners. It wouldn't explain drugs. It wouldn't explain women's shoes. And it wouldn't explain NASCAR. Okay, my prejudices, right? But it also wouldn't explain things like this. It wouldn't explain, is this the mouse comp there? It wouldn't explain racism. It wouldn't explain violence. It wouldn't explain rugged individualism. Ideas that have also found their ways among many others that are not good ideas. So that's one thing. It isn't how good the idea is. So we just kind of have to forget that. I've got the good idea, the right idea, the best idea, so therefore it's going to spread. No, it's not that simple. It does help, on the other hand, if there is a need for the idea. That's not a guarantee, but it does help if there's a need, a vulnerability in the system that idea is just waiting for, a question that's being asked. There wasn't a need for the bubonic plague. There's not a need for HIV. There's not a need for Zika. But there was a vulnerability. There is a vulnerability to it, which is the disease's equivalent of a need. Okay? For ideas, there needs to be a need. Or normally, there needs to be a need. So, and that's what happened. Ideas spread because they solve a problem that people have. Electricity, cell phones, airplanes. They solve problems whose time had come. You can say, well, no, those are products. Those aren't ideas. But like I said before, they were ideas long before they were products. And you, too, you always buy an idea before you purchase the product that idea represents. That represents the idea. Okay? So when a busy population is looking for a way to get dinner and not spend a lot of time or a lot of money, fast food appears. And it happens with Golden Arches, right? It helps if there is a need for the idea, although that still doesn't explain fidget spinners, drugs, high heels, or women's shoes in general, probably, and NASCAR. On the other hand, it does explain racism, it does explain violence, it does explain rugged individualism, because they fulfill a need. They fulfill a need for control. They fulfill a need of me dealing with the insecurity that I can't deal with myself. So those are ideas that do fill a need, not good ideas. But ideas that fulfill a need, all right? The third thing, the idea must be remarkable. Idea must be remarkable. Of all the diseases that were present in the 14th century, and I'm sure there were millions of them, of all the diseases that were present in the 14th century, it was Yersinia pestis that had its heyday. There was something about its makeup that was a perfect fit for the situation. On the cellular level, you could say that Yersinia pestis was remarkable. Its time had come. Now it's the same with ideas. There was no shortage of baseballs, tennis balls, footballs, things to throw in the 1950s, but frisbees floated through the air. That was remarkable. It wasn't that people didn't have bikes to ride in the early 60s, but you could ride a 10-speed up a hill without having to get off to push it. You know? Democracy meant that it wasn't just some rich and powerful people who decided everything, and you had to hope that it was helpful to you and not hurtful to you, but it meant that you had a voice that was as equal to everyone else's voice, and you had influence in the world. That was a remarkable idea. That's worth going to someone and talking about. Well, yeah, I know those bikes cost more, but take mine out for a ride. You're going to want one too, you know? It's remarkable. But remarkable doesn't just mean unique. It doesn't mean cool, all right? It means, and this is another Seth Godin thing, he talks about the fact that it's remarkable from the real literal sense of the word. You are able to make a remark about it. It is notable enough, and you are going to do that. And so I wonder, we like ideas. Ideas are important to us. Certain ideas are more important than others, but of your ideas, are they remarkable? Do you know what is remarkable about your idea? And the even more important question is, do you remark on it? Or do you just know that it's remarkable? Because if you don't, it won't spread. It's not going to spread. Now, that brings us to the fourth characteristic of ideas that spread, all right? The idea must have a story. It can't be remarkable if it doesn't have a story, and that story has two parts. First of all, it has a story of the idea itself, okay? Whatever it is, you know, telling about the story. Then the second part of that story is a story of your experience with that idea. That's the clincher, okay? The Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness is a story. You said, no, it's a place on the map. No, believe me, it's an idea that we all agree on, and we call it that, we name that, we designate it, it's an idea. The story about the idea itself is that it's a million acres of this beautiful boreal forest, pristine wilderness, beautiful lakes, just a wonderful place. That's the story of the thing itself. But then there's the story of my experience. And let me tell you, last fall, I was on Insula Lake. It was late at night. The northern lights came out, and the loons started calling. That's my story of it. That's the one that makes you believe the idea. At least 10% of our neighbors, our brothers, our sisters, our children, our grandchildren, they always have been and always will be attracted to people of the same gender as themselves. They are being oppressed and they are left out of basic human rights because they are gay. That's the story of the idea. My neighbors have been living next door to me for 12 years. They have raised two of the most extraordinary children I have ever met. They're great neighbors. We trust them with the key to our house. On summer evenings, we often end up sitting together on the porch just talking about life because they're great people. They just happen to both be men. But we need more people like them in our world because they love each other and they know how to love the world. That's my story of the idea. That's the one that makes people say, you're right. Gay people should have all the same rights the rest of us do. That's what I do. Our ideas need a story, but they also need our story. I think about Melanie Carlson's appeal to help pack meals as part of the Love Somalia Project. She had an idea, and I caught it. How many of you caught it? How many of you are intending to be there this afternoon? Wow. I mean, that's amazing. 100 people. She didn't really have much trouble at all. If you didn't sign up yet, you know, see her. We got, I think, as of yesterday, she had 18 spots yet. Fill them up, all right? She had almost no trouble finding it. But here's the deal. I don't know about you, but I didn't want to go because of the Somalians. I mean, yeah, I do. I mean, I know there's a drought. I know there's hungry people. But, you know, and I'm just really being frank and honest, all right? I don't really know how long the drought's been going on. At least I don't remember. And I don't know how many people are being affected. And I don't really know what all the consequences of that drought are. And I don't really know who's delivering the food that we're going to be packing from Feed My Starving Children and stuff like that. I'm going for the Somalians. But you know why I'm really going? I'm going because of Melanie. It's her story. I mean, did you hear her talking? She's excited. She identified something that she had an idea. She had an idea of something that's important to her, and she's passionate. She told us about what she's doing about it, something that matters. And that mattered to me, and I want to do that with her. I mean, does that make me a bad person? Am I wanting to pack food for the wrong reason? I don't think so. It's just the way it works. The idea that spreads wins. The idea that has our story with it is the idea that gets picked up and gets caught by another person. Melanie doesn't just know the disease, to use the disease metaphor. She caught the disease, all right? She's infectious. She's contagious. I caught it from her. That's pretty amazing stuff. So, just for a last thought, let's kind of take this in one other direction, okay? Let's talk about God. God is an idea. That doesn't mean God exists or doesn't exist, but the fact is, I mean, you know, God is an idea, right? Then we put that label on it. And God is an idea that is no longer remarkable to most people. It's an idea that is not spreading any longer. And that idea does have a story. The Bible, the church, public perception of Western Christianity. It's an idea that spread like wildfire for centuries. But unfortunately, today that idea has reached a population for whom it is no longer remarkable. Most of the population seems to have been vaccinated against this idea about God, right? We encounter it, but like most ideas we hear, it doesn't make much difference on us. It doesn't take a hold. We don't catch it. I could talk about the how and the why of it all day long. I actually do a lot of that with church leaders. That's really beside the point. That doesn't really matter. What matters is the idea is still a good idea. It's still a good idea. And it has the power to bring life. It has a power to make us whole. It has a power to weave us together so that we don't get pulled apart. It has a power to make us more than what we can just be by ourselves or even what we can be together. It helps us get beyond ourselves, bigger than ourselves, part of the biggest thing that is happening in our universe. We need to discover the story about that idea that speaks to the questions that people are asking today, that solves the problems that people have, not just the problems that they are supposed to have, that offers joy and possibility, not just guilt and obligation. And I think we know that story. I think we can tell our own version of it because it also needs our story. It doesn't just need a story from history, but the story of the life that you discover by opening yourself up to other people that are a part of that story. And exploring it and letting yourself get drawn beyond yourself to be something bigger, part of a conversation that matters. You have other remarkable stories within you that also need to get spread. Ideas about hope, ideas about family, ideas about gender or racial equality, about environmental justice, about children, about hobbies, about education, about music, about whatever. And all those stories actually are part of that same idea. I mean, God doesn't play games with us. God doesn't say, well, I need credit. My name has to be on it for it to work. He says, no, these stories that make us whole, these stories about your passion, what's remarkable to you, that's my story being played out in your life. I need you to spread that story. That's part of my story. It's part of my idea. It's part of who I am. We need to spread those. We need to be contagious. There's a man named John, first century. He was a companion of Jesus. It took him a long time to figure out what this Jesus experience, this Jesus idea had been all about. And when he finally decided it was time to tell his story, he wrote a book that is part of what we call the Bible today, which simply means book, right? And we call it the Gospel according to John. And he began his story like this. He said, in the beginning was the idea. He said, well, no, in the beginning was the word. Well, the Greek word there is logos. Logos, word, story, logic, idea, it's all the same. That all fits under the cluster of logos, right? In the beginning was the idea. And the idea was with God, and the idea was God. It was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through it, and without it, not one thing came into being. That is the story of the idea, where it come from, what it's about. But that's only the story of the idea. And then he goes on and says, and the idea became flesh and lived among us. full of grace and truth. This is the invitation to hear the story that came into our stories, how it changed us, how we experienced. And he goes on for 24 chapters telling about people encountering this idea and having stories in their lives, stories that were remarkable to them, stories that they had to and wanted to share with other people. And then he gets to the very, very end of it, and he says this, the last verse. There are many other things that Jesus, the idea, there are many other things that Jesus did. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that the world itself could not contain the books that would be written. John invites us to the story that hasn't been told yet. It's your story. It's my story. It's our story. He's telling us that we all need to discover it. And when we start telling the stories of what this God's self and other things means to us, all the books in the world, maybe even all the hard drives in the cloud, couldn't hold it all. It certainly couldn't hold the weight of it and the wonder of it, even if it could hold the volume of it. Our story. Remarkable. So, as a closing prayer, breathe, wiggle those toes again. Imagine the fabric of existence that you're called into and that you can touch, and you touch it with your brain, you touch it with your heart, you touch it with your hands, you touch it with your soul, all of it working together to make something that you can believe and show and share with other people. So spread your ideas, the good ones, the world-changing ones. God, help us, whether they're small or personal or whether they're global in reach, help us to know that they are all part of the idea. Help us to know, God, that you don't need the credit. You want us to be about life and the abundance of it. You want us to be about love for ourselves and for our neighbors. And when the God idea spreads, help us know that we all win. May it be so. Amen. Amen. Amen.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you, too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacobs Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have, too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.